Come to Morricone Island. It's Devin 11 show for your film and TV soundtracks. It's the number one place to go. From old world to new, like a cool breeze coming through. Yes, it's Morricone Island on WFMU.
Listening to Morricone Island on WFMU. I'm your host, Devin Levins, here every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m. playing the soundtrack hits, and this week is no exception. We have special guests joining us for a third time from across the pond, as they like to say, Scott Johansson, and he is the co-owner of the UK-based limited edition soundtrack label Andes Positives Recordings, and a member of the Life Score Collective Larva, amongst many, many other things. And he's back to discuss a new release, and he's kindly curated what is being coined as the West Midlands and Film soundtrack set that you all will get to enjoy this evening. So welcome back to the show, Scott.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Three times? Is that for real?
I thought, yeah. I look back. June 5th, 2018, we talked about your release for Messiah of Evil and the Larva La Jetée.
Mm-hmm.
And February 16th, 2016, your amazing release of The Mask. 3D.
3D anaglyph release, yeah.
One blue, one red.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. Holding it down here in
beautiful
Jersey City, New Jersey.
We got too much music to talk about to discuss the unmentionable, the unmentionables around us. So
yes,
we both seem to be doing okay.
And where are you? You're outside of Birmingham, UK?
No, I'm in Birmingham. It's like a small, traditionally kind of like arty sort of village. It's called a village, but it's like very conurbated and built up, you know. But I mean, there's sort of in the community that lives here, there's still like a proportion that still refers to it as the village.
And yeah,
most of those are kind of probably like people that remember the good old days when it was like a bit more of a kind of hippie arty sort of liberal hub,
right,
if you like. It's called Moseley. There's a few musical sort of notaries from like pretty much what, you know, stone's throw from where I'm sitting. I think that was the sort of inspiration for this, was like to do something about it expanded to the Midlands beyond Birmingham, because then I could include a few other people, a bit of Coventry and a bit of Northampton and places like that, which are like pretty close to where I am. But it does expand the scope of the involvement in film, which was the idea, is like bands and musicians that have been involved in scoring films over the years.
Right. So West Midlands, that where is there an East Midlands?
It's in the middle. There is. Yeah. East Midlands. Yeah. So West Midlands is Birmingham is the sort of the biggest city in that area. I think probably Birmingham's fairly familiar for there's a few bands that you're going to hear probably later on that had to be in the set because you can't not have them. But actually it was kind of tricky figuring, because I set myself, like when I do things like this, I set myself these stupid restrictions of like I wasn't just going to put like music in that was like featured in a movie, because that, you know, there's so much. There's like you could just stick to ELO, for instance. Like, you know, for some reason Mr. Blue Sky has been used in 10,000 films. I don't know why.
Right.
It's like, but it had to be stuff that was like specifically written for movies, and so that's kind of like the that was my self-imposed kind of brief.
And that's the theme for the show: the music written for the moving image.
Yeah, it's like pretty rich history of music in the area, different sort of eras of Birmingham and West Midlands music. And I mean, you started the show with like a little mini sort of sampler of like Birmingham stuff, including Pram, who I know there are bands that have their fans at the station, and the Moth to the Moon is an offshoot from Pram, so that's how kind of shoehorned them into that set, even though it's not strictly speaking from a film. The track is a new release, and it's very cinematic, and Pram have got quite a connection and a history to film. Like they've done scores and re-scores and short films and, you know, all sorts of related stuff.
And the music's generally described as cinematic, I would say, for them.
Yeah. That lazy old...
I mean, when I think of Birmingham, arguably, you would say that's where heavy metal originates. Some would argue. Some would say Helter Skelter, the Beatles. Some would say Black Sabbath, obviously from Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And also,
what about the Steel Blue Factory? Cheer.
Oh, Blue Cheer. Some would say Blue Cheer.
Shout out.
But yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a very honorable explosion of that sort of that music here that, you know. There was an exhibition a little while ago called Home of Metal. By Capsule, who do Supersonic Festival. They delved into all of the different kind of aspects of that culture and their bands from... I mean, actually doing some of this research, I didn't realise some of these bands had Birmingham connections, like Judas Priest. I didn't realise they were also local. So, and as I say, there's sort of different pockets of influence that the region has had on music, but it's all kind of like under the radar in some ways. Some of it is under the radar and a bit more subtle and doesn't get as much kind of attention and kind of acclaim as it maybe should, some of the creativity from this region. So
right,
any excuse to give a shout.
What about is Napalm Death, are they they're Birmingham,
absolutely.
Right,
yeah, Godflesh, Napalm Death,
yeah,
Hezu. Yep, very vibrant noise and metal experimental music scenes here.
So also we should right off the bat mention that as of last Friday, Undispositives has a new release, which we did just hear in that opening, and we'll discuss it more, but why don't we promote it right off the bat? It's a new project called Moths of the Moon, a band.
That's right, yeah. It's their first release, which we've just put out on vinyl and download, and it's members of the band Pram. So the connection's there. It's Sam and Max, who long-time members of that band, and it's their side project, which is very much in... I don't think anybody who likes Pram is going to be disappointed that they've suddenly done, like, something completely different. I think it's definitely recognizable Pramness about it. But Sam is the singer these days in Pram as well, but she's the main vocalist on Moths of the Moon, and Max is an instrumentalist and sampler and whatnot. And it's sort of like a mini album. It's like a 6-track mini album and some instrumental tracks, some vocal tracks. But as you say, all very kind of cinematic and evocative and slight touch of hauntology. The particular track that you've just played, there is going to be a video for that released, an animated video, which should be out. I don't actually know 100% when we're releasing that, but that should be out in the next like few weeks or a month or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's like a really beautiful stop motion animated film by an animator called Claire Evans that the band commissioned. So there is a film aspect to what they do. They're still, I think, probably they're going to try and get videos for all the songs eventually, or short films or animations. So
that's Girl Without a Face is the track that we heard, and we should back announce everything we heard. But first, for the uninitiated, Pram is a band formed in 1988 in Birmingham, UK, and many may know them more from the early 90s when they signed to 2Pure, label mates of Stereolab, trying to think who else, PJ Harvey?
That's right, yeah, early on, I think, yeah.
Yeah, an early release for her. And then eventually they ended up in the aughts, mid-aughts, at Domino, right? Mm-hmm. So... And then they took a long hiatus and they're back.
yeah. There's been quite a sort of break between albums. Well, not a break really, because that's the thing. It sort of looks like it's sort of a long break, but actually they've been sort of branching out into other media and doing, kind of theatrical stuff and, say, like film related stuff and their own side projects and things. So I mean, they've always been writing stuff, and Matt from Pram has his own side thing, Micronormous, which is great, like a one man band kind of electronica. But Yeah, I think they've been on Domino like for maybe 20 years now, something like that.
Right.
It only amounts to like a small amount of albums, but quite. They've got fans at that label, and they're certainly. I think in the next batch, actually, is it? Oh, no, sorry, in the first batch, I'm getting confused. The other track that's on the Hallam Foe soundtrack. So it was kind of like a Domino affair, that soundtrack. It had a bunch of acts from the label. Including Pram,
a lot of their catalog was
yeah,
in that.
Yeah. It was really interesting to see. It's just like that. It's a pretty good film, but also just like a film that had music specifically from just one label curated in that way. It sort of quite felt like quite an unusual thing to see. And there's some great music in it. And so it's a little bit similar, like Morven Keller, I think, did something similar with Warp Records, if I recall. Although it had some other stuff in there as well, like Cannes. Yeah, there was like a hot minute where everybody was kind of getting really into like pulling from a specific label.
Basically provide the music for an entire film. You have a history with Pram as well. You personally?
Yeah, that's right. Flexible title, I don't really know what to call myself sometimes, but I basically do the visual aspects for them, whether that's live material, live visuals and projections, or doing short films and music videos for them. We've done a couple of larger scale multimedia shows as well. We did a big show called Shadow Shows, which is like a huge triple screen, kind of like Abel Gance's Napoleon sort of scale music and, well, sort of theatrical music and visuals and a lot of shadow play. And the band basically performed behind a screen and kind of acted as sort of performers as well in some of the other elements. So it was like, yeah, it's fun working with them. We always sort of come up with new ways to sort of do like tangential things that our main passions, you know, kind of film and sort of film history a bit as well, with kind of German expressionism and things like that, and just find different ways to kind of explore that and play around with it.
Are you still involved, like periodically?
Yeah, although
besides releasing side projects.
Yes. Well, that's it. Yeah, that kind of sort of fell into our lap, the release, in a way. They were looking for some way to do it, and we said, well, yeah, sure, we'll do that. We haven't put a record out for a while as well, so it was good to get involved. I haven't actually shown you the record. I should give you, because Devin and I are actually looking at our mugs on the Zoom, so that's the vinyl. It's nice. A 10-inch vinyl with moth sleeve over bag,
right?
For the deluxe version. Not so much working together at the moment because of the situation, really. Mainly because the sort of opportunity for playing is not there. That aspect of it is kind of. But I'm in terms of like working with Sam and Max on this project, I'm planning to do a video for them in the next few months, which will be the first time that I've sort of unveiled this. I don't know, we call it like it's sort of an innovation on an old piece of film equipment. Let's put it that way for now. Like using 8mm cameras in a sort of unusual way, and yeah, hopefully we'll get on with that soon.
Right. So we should also mention that the label that you co-founded is also with Nick Sales, who is a multi-instrumentalist for the band as well. So there's all kinds of Pramness coming in.
That's true. Yeah.
why don't we talk about how everything that we've played and everything we're going to play somehow relates to the West Midlands and film.
Yeah.
So why don't we back announce from the beginning what we heard?
Definitely, yeah. That first set is sort of themed around, as I say, that kind of... There was like an era in Birmingham, that's specifically Birmingham stuff, and it's an era of like quite fertile music, sort of like mid-90s onwards, and... There was a lot of really great bands in this area, and for a moment, sort of like focused around Pram and Broadcast, there was an attempt to make a sort of scene in you know, the press in some ways about like this kind of the Pram retro futurist kind of thing. It was coined. That first set sort of represents some of that stuff that was going on, with the exception of the first track, which was Delia Derbyshire and Brian Hodgson. Legend of Hell House soundtrack, and Delia's one of our I say expanded the scope beyond Birmingham because to have Delia, I had to expand to Coventry. So for starters, I needed to be some Delia. And she's a big influence on both Pram and Moths of the Moon. So it's a nice segue there. So yeah, the second track was Girl Without a Face from their album, Moths of the Moon. It's called Another Place, the album. And that's followed by The Equestrian Vortex from the Barbarian Sound studio soundtrack by aforementioned Broadcast, who actually did the whole score to that film and worked with Peter Strickland. I think probably meant to work with him more if it hadn't sadly been for Trish's passing. Trish from the band Broadcast, they had a really good relationship with them, working relationship. But and then that was followed by Track of the Cat from the Hal and Foe soundtrack by Pram, and another track from Hal and Foe, just because I want to hear this on the radio, because they're a great sort of unheralded Birmingham band from the late 90s called Woodbine. They were on Domino Records, and that, yeah, so that track's from Hal and Foe, beautiful, beautiful piece of music. So Susan Delane, the singer, is one of the great unheralded voices, I think.
So Hal and Foe, that came out 2007. That's the same year that Pram went to Domino. So was that one of the first things they did?
I'm not very good on chronology and things like that. Pram were on Domino from much earlier, because their album Dark Island came out in 2003-ish, I think it was, and they'd done stuff before that even. So yeah, it's an interesting film. Have you seen that?
No.
It's quite good.
In a perfect world, I would have watched and rewatched a lot of these. Funnily, some of the things that are coming up, that I know are coming up, are things that are on my DVR for rewatches.
strangely. Cool.
just coincidentally, two of them, where I was like, oh, I haven't seen that in a long time, and I recorded it and meant to get to it.
Trying to guess what they are now.
Yeah, well, maybe after the fact I'll. But yeah, so why don't we get to the next set and see what you have in store for us. Again, mm-hmm. West Midlands and Film, curated by my guest Scott Johansson of the label Andes Positives Recordings, and they have a new release just freshly out, just dropped, as they say, which is Moths of the Moon, just last Friday, June 30th. So what do you have in store for us?
So the scope sort of expands a little in the second section to be more focused on composers. And we have kicking off with Nanette Ebony soundtrack by Tindersticks. They did a lot of soundtrack work, obviously, but I think this is one of the earliest ones with Claire Denis, the filmmaker that collaborated on a lot of movies with her. And I just really loved it. I think this is like just a personal pick because it was the first time I heard Tindersticks. It's a classic thing for me. It's like I quite often get into things through movies, like in terms of music. And so even though Tindersticks have been around for quite a while, my first experience of them was a movie and a soundtrack. So it's a really lovely score. Never seen the film, though, strangely. And that's followed by... Now, this was an interesting one for me because I had no idea that this composer, who turns out to be... somebody that I'm very, very fond of. Like, I'm a bit of a composer geek, so I mean, I don't know how obvious that is just from hearing me talking about film music. But Stanley Myers is actually a Birmingham lad, so he kind of went from nowhere to like pretty much the most high profile film composer in this sort of like. Well, actually, no, we get to some big boys later on, but you know, they're more bands. But in terms of film composer, he's like got a huge body of work and some, you know, really great movies. And that track that we're going to hear is the main theme from Sitting Target, which is a late 60s sort of thriller, a real banger of a main theme. But he went on to work with Hans Zimmer quite early in his career. I think they collaborated on quite a lot of soundtracks. And Nick Rogue, who, like, that's I think probably the first time I heard him in a film was in things like Eureka and Insignificance, and his music's just gorgeous, like amazing scoring. That's followed by another one who is a composer I didn't know was from the Midlands, and that's Alan Parker from, he's like a composer from the KPM label, is probably like how most people would know,
right.
Know him if they know him at all.
Session guitarist.
Yeah,
so he's
sure.
on a million famous, for, I think he's the hurdy-gurdy man, right? Guitar.
He is the hurdy-gurdy man, yeah, as well as Melody Nelson, I think, which, so, oh, yeah. You know, it just blew my mind, kind of like these guys that I had no idea were local talent, and then finding out that, yeah, Alan Parker was like extremely storied career and very, very cool, but also did like some film scoring. And then I found out he did Jaws 3D. I was like, wow, well, that's going on the set, because that's a crazy film. So that's the end titles from Jaws 3D by Alan Parker. And then we're finishing off with another kind of big local success story. It's probably the most well-known composer that the region has ever had. Again, expanding the region kind of brief a little bit, because he's sort of more from the Stourbridge area, which is like North Birmingham, and Clint Mansell from the band Pop Bleat itself, who like very bizarrely just ended up being this like massive film composer, which to people like myself who'd grown up sort of as a teenager going to see Pop Bleat itself misbehave at gigs and just acting like drunken lads at discos and stuff. It's just like, for him to like end up in this very high profile composing position, it's pretty funny, actually. It's cool.
Yeah,
cool and funny.
They're a band that when I first started doing college radio, late 80s, that I discovered, you know, when I was being exposed to just, you know, more than punk rock and classic rock and metal and stuff like that. And for whatever reason, I really latched onto that band, and I remember I played them a lot. Also, I've had the fortunate opportunity to speak with him on the earlier incarnation of this show on a previous station, but I've been meaning to try to get him back, and we correspond. So it sounds like I always try to get people in person when they're in New York.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This, during the pandemic, would have been a nice time, but he's obviously associated with a lot of New York-centric films, like Pi, with Darren Aronofsky, Pi, Requiem for a Dream, which is Coney Island, more Coney Island. and Ben Wheatley more recently, but yeah, he's been very prolific.
I don't think I ever got that pun until right this second. Oh man, I feel so stupid.
About what?
I don't think I ever heard that pun.
Oh yeah,
before, about Morricone Island. Oh man.
Oh, but the track you picked is probably my favorite score of.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, that's Welcome to Lunar Industries from Moon. That soundtrack is awesome. I definitely noticed this music before then, but I think, yeah, something about that one. He's working with, is it the Kronos Quartet on that one as well? Because I know he works with them on Requiem.
I know they're on Requiem. I don't know if they're on that or not.
Maybe they're not on that one.
Duncan Jones. David Bowie's son. It's his directorial debut. Sam Rockwell. And the voice of... pre-canceled Kevin Spacey. But it's great film, great music.
Yeah, I think he'd be a great guest, because of from everything that I see about his interaction with, you know, up-and-coming composers and things like that, very accessible and very 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 good person to sort of speak to, which I would say is like kind of a Birmingham trait or a Midlands trait, is kind of not being too kind of full of yourself even when you become as successful as he has.
Yeah.
Might be being a bit, you know, kind of simplistic about it, but it very much strikes me. I mean, it really does tickle me, actually, that when you hear him in interviews, he's still got his Midlands twang. You know, he's not, he hasn't gone full LA. He hasn't sort of ditched his regional, kind of birth. So yeah, it's a success story for the region to have somebody so high profile, for sure. I'm sure he inspires a lot of, you know, up-and-coming composers and musicians. But they should listen to Beaver Patrol before they get too carried away with lauding him with plaudits.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Hear this next set. Again, we're going to start with Tindersticks, Nanette, and Bonnie. And we'll be right back with my guest, Scott Johansson of Andes Positives Recordings on Morricone Island. And that whole set, as everything you're hearing tonight, was curated by my guest, Scott Johansson, of Andes Positives Recordings. They have a new release just out as of last Friday, and that's for Moth of the Moon. Features a couple of members of Pram, if you remember them. They're still around. There's no reason to forget. And I must admit that one of the DVR films was Jaws 3D.
I guessed it might be.
My wife and I rewatched 1 and 2, and 3D was next up. That's the one that takes place in the SeaWorld-type amusement park, right?
Yeah. It's really silly, but it came out at the height of the sort of the 3D craze in the 80s, didn't it? And I just was gaga for anything that was coming out at that time, so I do remember it fondly. I think you'll have fun with it, Dennis Quaid. And
yeah, and there was some there was a period where it was actually in 3D, so there was a period where some of the movie, I remember Friday 13th Part 3, there was the 3D thing happening for a while.
Yeah.
That's Dennis Quaid and Leah Thompson of an all-time favorite movie, All the Right Moves, which I just played last week or 2 weeks ago.
I've got to say, I think Alan Parker did a pretty good job, you know, standing on the shoulders of certain notable composers with it. Yeah. You know, he didn't disgrace himself with Jaws 3D.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I remember that film received some of the Golden Raspberry Awards, as they say, but not the music. Or at least it was nominated, yeah.
Oh, right, because I mean, I know Four famously kind of got all of the Razzies. Four is truly, like, something else in terms of bewildering and awful.
But music wasn't one of them, fortunately.
Right, okay, yeah. Cool.
Maybe one of the best parts of the film. I guess coming up, you've created a whole nother segment that makes sense to me. Seems a little thematic where you're going.
Yes, I sort of went for some of the big boys for the last section. Things that it would be remiss to leave out of a conversation about Midlands and film. So, yeah. I mean, I ended up curating like probably over 2 hours of music. It was really hard to whittle it down, but it's more than I thought there would be, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're kicking off the next set with Black Sabbath. And that, I might be wrong here, and somebody could probably correct me, but I don't think they did any sort of bespoke music, if you like. I don't think they actually created music, original music for any films, unless it's this track from the Heavy Metal soundtrack. But I suspect somebody will correct me and tell me it's from an album. It's E5150. It's kind of a weird little instrumental track.
I know it appeared on Mob Rules eventually.
So that kept coming up in searches I was looking for, but I wasn't sure if it was like before the chicken or the egg, whether it was for heavy metal or
they
taken
often
from
put their soundtrack track on there, right to help sell the record, and that happens time after time after time. So
you're saying that track was written for heavy metal?
I don't know, because that's the problem. A lot of the music for heavy metal was original to it. But I've never gone down that rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
I also right when you said that, I sort of wonder. I go, oh, like, has Ozzy ever written a song specific? Like some of the members solo. Even that's not Ozzy. That's a Dio era.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know if he. I think the only thing that jumps into my mind, because I know he's in the film, and I think he may have contributed a song, but again, I don't know if it's an original. It's the a really great 86 horror film Trick or Treat. The Charles Martin Smith directed film with Gene Simmons as a sort of satanic backmasking devil metal guy. It's an awesome film. It's so much fun. But he's in that. Ozzy plays a preacher in that. And seem to remember that maybe there's a song by him in it. Although the soundtrack's by a band called Fastaway. Maybe not. Maybe he's not on the score for that one.
Right. And I think a recent guest.
Devin, it was Christopher Young.
Christopher Young, that's right.
Yeah.
Recent guest as well.
unreleased score, it's really good. I tried. I did my best to see if I could find something that was an original, but I came up against a bit of a wall. It's surprising, actually. It's like some bands that you'd think would have maybe been tapped for doing that sort of stuff. You know, like kind of AC/DC with Maximum Overdrive, where Stephen King got them to write a couple of originals for the soundtrack. And you'd think that, like, I don't know, Led Zeppelin maybe would have been tapped for a soundtrack, or You know, but the only thing that really was original of theirs is the song remains the same, which is kind of, doesn't really qualify. It's like a live album, but it is a movie. So
it's like Beatles Help.
Yeah. I decided to leave the Zep out of the set, but we do go on to an original, which is a big favorite of mine. And I can't not have Duran Duran in a set that's celebrating Midlands in film, because they're one of the great bands from this area, one of the most successful. And I think View to a Kill is a pretty killer Bond theme. Duran Duran with John Barry. And apparently he enjoyed working with them as well, which is nice. He hated A-ha and he loved Duran Duran. So,
did Duran Duran back in the day tout that they were from Birmingham? They were originally Birmingham, right?
They are, yeah. The brothers are from Birmingham. And I think Simon Le Bon is Birmingham adjacent, maybe. Or no, maybe he's the one that comes from elsewhere. But they're definitely like very strong Birmingham connection.
Yeah. And then, yeah, one of their biggest hits.
Yeah, I think it's a great theme. And that's followed by another Coventry. So Coventry is another city that's within the Midlands. And that's Eighth Day by Hazel O'Connor. So I have no idea whether Hazel O'Connor is still somebody that people know about, but she was a kind of new wave pop punk, kind of face at a certain time. And there was a movie that she was in called Breaking Glass, which had its time, you know. It was kind of in the zeitgeist of like films like Jubilee and stuff like that, maybe a little bit later. But it's kind of actually got more of a kind of vibe in my memory. It's got more of a vibe of like Liquid Sky, but I think I've made that up. I think it's probably much more cheesy and kind of like a traditional rags to riches like pop star story, like Stardust or something like that. But
yeah,
she probably gets chewed up and spat out if I'm remembering rightly. But it's a good tune. It was a hit, if I recall.
There was a period of time where any film or TV show that had a punk rock undertone or was about punk, or even a scene, or even a person with a mohawk.
Yeah.
at least me and my friends, we would be attracted to that. So I remember Breaking Glass for sure. And then I remember learning that Gary Tibbs of Adam and the Ants.
Oh yeah.
And the Vibrators and all that. Like mm-hmm. he was the bass player in her band. And
Right.
I was okay. An early Adam and the Ants fan.
Yeah. Same here actually.
But so you're saying she's from Coventry?
Yeah,
England,
she's,
and that's part of the area?
Yeah, so in the broader Midlands, yeah, that's the same city that Delia Derbyshire is from, so yeah. I had to expand the horizons of my own remit so I could include them. But yeah, it's worth checking out the film, I think. Although I should probably watch it myself before I recommend it to anyone. it's been a long time, as they say. It's very pop, and it's almost got more of a The Wall kind of vibe about it, if I remember rightly. But it's definitely kind of one of those, like, the music industry is not going to treat you very well kind of movies. I really loved like the punk films from that era, like, you know, Times Square and Fabulous Stains, which is like,
oh yeah,
it just seemed like nobody knew about that film for years, and then suddenly it's like I've been championing it, and it's like suddenly it's got a bit more kind of awareness about it. It's like such a fun movie.
There was even like the punk episode of Quincy, or the punk episode
the famous
Chips. Yeah. I even remember watching Road Warrior, because I heard there was I saw Road Warrior before Mad Max.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it because, oh, there's guys with mohawks in it or something.
You know? There certainly are.
I think I included a track of Hazel O'Connor. Like, we do a premium every year, a thematic, you know, to raise money for the station. And I did one a few years ago with 2 CD set of When an Actor Sings. So I'm pretty sure I did. Hazel O'Connor made that CD.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was all like singers, actors who actually sing the song that was written for the film.
Right. And, I like that.
The same problem you had with this. I couldn't squeeze it onto one CD, so it ended up being two CDs.
Yeah.
And then Birmingham's own Olivia Newton-John. No, just
not so much, not so much. But her cohort in Xanadu, Jeff Lynne, ELO, kind of obviously like big Birmingham heroes for a lot of people. I like them. I like them fine. I like them quite a bit. I'm surprised that actually Jeff Lynne didn't do more sort of original music for films, since he was so talented with arranging and composing and things. And I think Xanadu, it may be that Xanadu put him off, because I don't think it was like a great experience for him. It was a difficult film. I did read like some background thing about how, like, the band ELO was saying that Jeff Lynne recorded, he recorded some aspects of the score or some demo or something like that, without any timing, and then they had to like record their parts without any timing, and they just said it was an absolute it was an absolute nightmare. It was like, it's just bizarre. Like, I imagine, like, just incredibly frustrating to be like someone like that and having to work that way, and you're just thinking, yeah, this is going to be really, really hard and not fun. So, but yeah. No, you can't tell any of that in the film. It's such a joyous, wonderful movie and soundtrack, and I haven't revisited it since I was a kid. Have you seen the film, Xanadu?
Coincidentally, that is one of the other films that was on my DVR. And
that was my other guess.
I have not seen it since seeing it as a kid in the movie theater, like when it came out. I was the exact age.
I need to know it's better than The Apple. That's all I care. Is it better than Menachem Golan's The Apple?
I did start it once or twice and did not get through it. So it's not that I was just kind of half watching or something, so I did want to give it a proper watch, just because it was one of those films that I, as a kid, I remember enjoying and wondering how it held up, because I also enjoyed Sergeant Pepper's.
Right. I don't play with that stuff, but
and I'm told that's a horrible movie. Yeah. I wouldn't know, because I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I don't play with those Beatles films at all. My dad is in one of those movies, weirdly. This strange thing, but I think it's Help. Is that the one with the battle scene, like a battleground with tanks running around everywhere? It's like
when they cut to like random.
Yeah, there's like a whole big scene.
I think that's Help.
Not that long ago. I watched it to try and find him finally, because he told me the story like a long time ago. But he was a soldier at the time, and he was the barracks they were filming at was his squadron, or whatever they call it in Scotland. It was in Scotland, and he's in the film as one of the tank personnel. He sort of like flies past in a tank at some point. And the last time I tried to find him, I did see somebody who looked just like me at like kind of the age of like 30-35. I was like, holy shit, is that my dad in the Beatles movie? But Xanadu is cool. It has loads of stuff that like kids, yeah, I can totally understand why I liked it as a kid. It's really, really silly and colourful and daft, and all that stuff about the muses, actually, like, it sounds really cheesy now, but I loved that when I was a kid, like this idea of the Greek muses sort of materialising on Earth. It's just, where, I don't know, I don't think either of us is like necessarily endorsing a rewatch of Xanadu, but I think I'm going to go there.
Yeah, it's just coincidence that I have two of your films unknowingly sitting on that DVR, and they've been on there a long time. We would say maybe a couple of years at this point.
Yeah.
But on that to-do list, at some point I saw it and thought that that'd be a good idea.
But ELO have been like used in a ton of movies. I don't know. It's just like a weird thing with music supervisors like reaching for the ELO track. Like, you know, think about your options. No, I just want Mr. Blue Sky. That's all we need. Like, it's kind of like a joke in a way, how sort of
and re-listening to the track
prevalent
re-listening to the track, it doesn't sound that out of character for them.
No, you
know what I mean, like, it's
not really,
I mean, besides the fact that she's on it, but the production of it
is
pretty similar to a typical ELO show. Let me reintroduce my guest. It's Scott Johansson of the Birmingham based UK label On Dispositives, and they have a new release out, just fresh out, Moths on the Moon, which is a 10-inch. And where do listeners find this? Do they go to your website?
Yeah, our website, onspositivesrecordings.com. Our Bandcamp, if you just search for On Dispositives Recordings Bandcamp, you can get the digital, if that's what you prefer. And there's two different vinyl editions. There's like a standard 10-inch, and there's a deluxe version that comes with an art print and all of those kind of things, if that's the sort of thing you're into. And in the US, actually, US listeners can get it. You can save yourselves an extortionate amount of shipping these days from the UK. You could get it from twoheadeddog.com, who are based in California, in Hemet, and they're an online store, and they'll be they're stocking it now, actually. You'll be able to grab it from them. Or, yeah, go and have a listen on our Bandcamp, see if it floats your boat. Spooky, hauntological stuff.
And anything else in the works on the horizon coming out, and anything with Larva, your band? And
Larva's a bit dormant, but we are Unspositives is working on, we're going back to our roots in sort of early electronic stuff and soundtracky stuff. Can't really talk about it yet because it'll jinx it, but we do have something in our sights which we've been working on for quite a while, and it's north of your border is the origin of it. So it's like some untapped resources from the frozen north.
It's a reissue type thing? I mean, like a film soundtrack?
Film related, film adjacent, film related. Early electronics, and I would say like untapped. It's like an untapped aspect of early electronic music. So yeah, I won't say too much. I'm already probably in trouble with my cohort for saying that much, but
I have no idea.
I have no idea
from your description of that.
If Devin doesn't know, it's I mean, the whole point of doing some of the stuff we do is because people have no idea. You know, that's kind of like the fun for us is like putting out, you know, some of this, like Messiah of Evil. I just assumed that everybody knew about that film and that the music was good, but got so much feedback from people buying the soundtrack because they, in inverted commas, thought it was cool, and you know, the package and everything, it was like a cool thing, but then watching the film and being like, that film is bananas. It's like, it's a real gem. So yeah, we're definitely into unearthing stuff. I actually can I just mention, I've started podcasting again. I don't think I told you about this, but because the last time we spoke, I was podcasting about soundtracks with a friend of mine, and we kind of sort of departed a bit. He carried on, but I'd sort of had other things come along, so I sort of didn't have time for it really. But we started up again, and we're basically just talking about, very informally, about new records that we're getting, and that can mean old records, as in they're new to us, sort of thing. But that's the Tony and Scott Motion Picture Podcast, because we're called Tony and Scott, so we're so lazy with the naming on this one. We were like, we'll call it the Tony Scott Podcast and get hundreds of accidental listens and subscribers. Right. Hasn't happened.
So it's Tony Giles, who used to do the Damn Fine Cast with.
The Damn Fine Cast, yeah. So, I mean, Tony's never stopped doing that kind of, like, yeoman sort of service to the community of, like, reviewing records and unboxings and all that kind of stuff. But, being back in the sort of, like this Zoom world that we now live in, it kind of means that there's the possibility to do that kind of thing at sort of fraction of the time and effort that it was taking before, because we don't live in the same place and stuff like that. So yeah, it kind of unlocks the ability to do it again. And it's fun to do. I do like talking about records, it seems. Can't keep me away from them.
So that's available at wherever people download.
So on Twitter, we are the Tony Scott Pod, and the Libsyn, we're on the Apple and the iTunes and all that stuff. And I think it's, I should have checked. I think it's Tony and Scott Motion Picture Podcast.
Okay.
That's how you'll find us. Drop in and say hi and listen to us talk about, I don't know, getting some rare Japanese edition of a Cam soundtrack from 68 or some nonsense.
is Moths on the Moon, is that a band that will they actually be out performing when things open back up?
I'd love to hope so. I mean, you know, people that we know in other bands have already booking tours and things, like, you know, very optimistically, in my opinion, at the moment, because we're recording this just the week that the UK has just reclaimed its freedom, as they say, prematurely thrown all of the precaution to the wind, and we're conducting the great pandemic experiment. So who knows what's going to happen, you know. I mean, I know people in bands like the Nightingales, for instance, they've been chomping at the bit to tour, And they've just booked Klangbad Festival in Germany, but obviously they're a bit worried about whether they're going to be able to go there or not. So, and they've got a tour coming up in a month or so. So I think like the Moths of the Moon would really, they've played a bunch of live shows under their previous name of Two Dogs, but they'll kind of be relaunching as Moths of the Moon now that the album is out. And yeah, it'd be great to think that we could do some shows and support them doing that later this year. So yeah, maybe keep an eye on our social medias.
All right. Well, again, thanks for coming on. Excited to hear the full release of Moths on the Moon. Again, my guest, Scott Johansson, on Dispositives Recordings. And come back soon. Maybe in person one day.
Oh, God, that would be amazing. Yeah.